I'm done with subscriptions. Streaming, fitness, razors, vitamins. I've got subscriptions for everything in my life. They lock you in, and half the time, I can't figure out how to unsubscribe. That's why I'm so excited about the new Blue Apron. Now you can get delicious meals delivered with no subscription needed, including new pre-made options. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with someone you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One-on-One, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
I always say that I don't remember a moment when I said, this is what I want to do, but I also don't remember a moment ever of not wanting to do what I'm doing. This is always what I've wanted to do. I had it in mind when I went to college that I wanted to be a golf professional. So it was kind of always on my radar that this was it.
And our guest this week is Jeff Kitty. He is the head golf professional at Aronimink Golf Club, of course, one of the top courses in the country. And Jeff, thanks so much for coming in.
Yeah, appreciate it, Matt. Nice to be here.
So, as we are recording this in mid-June, what's life like? What's your day-to-day focus?
Well, we've got kind of two focuses right now. We've got our normal focus of running our golf operation for our members and their guests and all of our junior programming and all the stuff that we do. But we've also got our eye on the 2026 PGA Championship, which is going to be here in less than a year. So, we've kind of got two different things going right now.
When it comes to prepping for the PGA Championship, like we said, we're a year out, but huge events like this isn't something you focus in on the last couple of weeks. Like, what are the preps like at this point? Is it meetings? Is it just making sure that your personnel is going to be able to meet the moment as far as numbers and stuff like that? Like, what are the meetings like right now?
Yeah, we definitely have a lot of meetings kicking up right now, you know, with the more frequency with the meetings, you know, in different types of meetings. You know, we've got the sales committee for the hospitality sales. We've got kind of our key staff members of Aronimink working with the key volunteers from Aronimink involved with the tournament and the PGA of America staff. So meetings with that. But a lot of the prep work right now has been in place and has been ramping up is stuff for the infrastructure. You know, creating a television compound, the broadcast compound is a big project for us, helping to make the bus depot compound better, things like that, which are big infrastructure drainage projects, things like that. Those are the things going on. We've already kind of passed the point of getting the golf course ready for the tournament with some added length, narrowing of some fairways. We took care of most of that last fall. I did that in-house. Our team did that, you know, along with our golf architect, Gil Hans. So it's a lot. It's a lot of stuff going on with it.
What is the impact of having an event like the PGA Championship at your club? Do you have an idea of what this can mean, an event like this?
I think it's hard to have a metric of what it means. I mean, it's a tremendous honor. You know, there's only four major championships in golf, and there's really only two that a club like Aronimink could get, and that's either a PGA Championship or a U.S. Open. We're obviously not getting the Masters, and the Open stays in the U.K. So it's a tremendous honor. And you know, what does it mean to the club? It means we take this seriously, and we want to be great stewards of this championship. And our goal is to have the best PGA Championship to date.
When you're readying for something like this, is it hard to not let the golf get lost? Like, I'm sure there are so many things you've got to worry about from a standpoint of preparation. You talked about the broadcast compound and all that and logistics and all. But Do you ever have to kind of remind that the game, the golf is the thing?
Yeah, I think that's a fair question. And largely what we do is not really about the game. You know, that's handled by our championships team from the PGA of America, Kerry Haig, who's the chief championships officer. It's kind of his job to present the golf course to, you know, make the tournament as compelling as possible. And, you know, obviously working with our agronomy team to do all that work. But, you know, that's more or less kind of their job. Our job is to make sure we're great hosts and have everything that the PGA Championship needs to have a successful tournament. But, you know, again, you're like you said, the net goal is to have a great tournament that's about the players. You know, that's what it's about.
So as a golf professional, the head golf professional at Aronimink, we kind of talked about your focus this time of year. But overall, if you were to describe your job to someone not familiar with it, what's the elevator pitch? How would you break down what you do day to day?
Yeah, I think for people that aren't in the know of what golf professionals do, I think when I tell somebody I'm a golf professional, the first thing they think of is people playing on TV. You know, they're professional golfers. We're golf professionals. You know, we run our clubs and our courses, all the golf operations, you know, everything short of, you know, taking care of the golf course. We run all of our competitions. We do all the instruction, individual lessons, clinics, junior clinics, you know, growth of the game initiatives are a big thing for us. We run the retail operation at the pro shop, you know, which is a significant operation for us. Daily play, the hospitality that's involved with hosting our members and our guests and, you know, taking care of their golf needs.
You mentioned, because one of the questions I wanted to ask you that I would be fascinated to dig into, you kind of said it, that you're a golf professional and there are professional golfers. And to your point, I think the average person just lumps them all under the same umbrella. But explain the difference. You know, like really dig into the difference of a golf professional as opposed to a professional golfer.
Yeah, professional golfer is making their living or trying to make their living playing golf. They're playing for purses to – that's how they make a living. Golf professionals, we make our living in running our facilities. So the PGA of America is the association that golf professionals are members of. That's our organization. And that's the organization that's hosting this championship. This is the PGA of America's championship. It's the PGA championship. And it can get confused with the PGA Tour. We share those three letters. So the PGA Tour are the professional golfers. The PGA golf professionals are the members that are running the game of golf, you know, and growing the game of golf and running all the operations, be it private or public golf courses. And it doesn't even have to be courses anymore. It can be non-green grass facilities that PGA of America professionals are running. So, you know, there's a line where professional golfers play for millions and PGA professionals, golf professionals get millions to play.
How much do you get to play?
I play a decent amount. Coming off a little bit of an elbow surgery here, so I've been a little slow this spring. But, you know, I play a couple times a week at minimum. I always say I wouldn't do this job if I couldn't play golf, because that's why I got into the business. That's why we all got into the business, is because we love the game. So if I couldn't play, I don't think I'd do the job, because I wouldn't enjoy as much. I love to play. I love to compete still. I love to play with the members. I love to play with, you know, my oldest son, whatever it is, I love to play. So I've been fortunate. And in our club, Aronimink's very supportive of our professional staff playing. It's important for them to be out there playing with the members and getting to know the members, getting to know their games and getting to know them just as individuals. 4 hours is a whole lot better than just walking past them and saying hello. So it's really important. So, you know, we play.
What do you think is the strength of your game?
Strength of my game? Short game for sure. I'm a good putter, and I'm not afraid of chipping and putting, bunker play and things like that is definitely the strength of my game.
So now let's back up a little bit. What is your – reading up on you, it sounds like golf has been a part of your life, your family's life for a long time. Kind of give us your origin story into the game.
Yeah, so I grew up in upstate New York, just outside of Rochester, New York, and I grew up around the game. I didn't grow up at a club or anything. I grew up near a public golf course that was family-owned by this great family that just took great care of us as kids. You know, we started working there maybe a little bit too young. We might have violated some work rules with how young we started. But I kind of grew up in another way too. My dad was a golf sales rep. He went to college to play golf at Ohio University, and then he was a golf sales rep after a short stint as an assistant professional. He was a golf sales rep. So he was calling on the club professionals in Rochester and Buffalo and Erie. So I kind of got to know who those professionals were through my dad. And, you know, a fun day for me was hopping in the van and going to, you know, if he had to run over to a course to drop something off or pick something up, for me, getting to meet the golf professionals was great. And I always say that I don't remember a moment when I said, this is what I want to do, but I also don't remember a moment ever of not wanting to do what I'm doing. This is always what I've wanted to do. I had it in mind when I went to college that I wanted to be a golf professional. So it was kind of always on my radar that this was it.
When do you start to feel like you become a pretty good golf player?
You know, again, I didn't grow up at a private club or anything, and Rochester's a small town. So I played in junior golf events, and I was decent. I wasn't the best player in Rochester by any means, but I was decent and could compete in the area junior events. And I knew I wanted to play golf in college, and I wasn't a great student necessarily, but I knew I wanted to play golf in college. So I looked at a couple of different avenues of where I could play, and I ended up playing at a Division II school in Erie, Pennsylvania, called Gannon University, and it was perfect for me. You know, we were a D2 school, we were a good, decent Division II program, and I you know, started early on and played all the way through. So, and again, I never had visions of past the age of maybe 16 of playing on tour. I knew I wasn't good enough for that, but I knew I wanted to be around the game.
Playing college golf in Erie, Pennsylvania, I would imagine the weather was a constant thing you had to overcome.
Yeah, playing golf in the Northeast anywhere, you battle the elements. We've had plenty of tournaments where we had a snow delay, not even a rain delay. We had a snow delay in the spring or the fall. But but coming from Rochester, New York, I didn't know any better with that.
What is the road that brings you to Aronimink?
Yeah, kind of a fun road. I worked at two different golf courses in Rochester, Locust Hill Country Club and Monroe Golf Club. At Monroe, I started to apply for head professional positions, and I actually applied for a job here in the greater Philly area at St. David's Golf Club, and I didn't get an interview. And I said, you know, this was a perfect job for me. I worked at a similar type club in Rochester and felt like I had all the right experience, and I didn't even get an interview. So I knew I needed to work at a place to get a little more exposure, bigger market, more exposure. And long story short, through the help of a golf professional at Marion Golf Club, he ended up sharing my resume at Pine Valley Golf Club to Charlie Roudenbush, who's been the longtime general manager and director of golf there. I ended up having a friend who was the superintendent at the club that I was working at in Rochester that had worked there. And he made a great reference for me. And that was my introduction to Philly golf, that I got to come down and work at Pine Valley. And I knew Pine Valley was special, but I didn't know how special. So it was an incredible opportunity to work at the number one golf course in the world. And I worked there for a year as an assistant professional before I got a head professional job at a new private golf course, you know, not far from Aronimink, called Applebrook Golf Club. So I got to be part of a new golf course that was just opening. So it was an incredible opportunity. But I owe the opportunity to, you know, my previous opportunities, but especially to Pine Valley for introducing me to those members that were starting this club.
How would you describe, what is the biggest difference when you make the step up from an assistant golf professional or just a golf professional to the head golf professional? Like, what responsibilities are added? What are other boxes you have to check? How do the roles differ?
Yeah, it's probably the same as any leadership or, you know, manager type position, where instead of being the person that's being managed, you're managing all the people. So managing the other assistant professionals and, you know, all the other, you know, key staff members that we have, you know, instead of just kind of worrying about a little bit more about yourself and your teammates that you're working with, is, you know, managing all of it, but then overseeing the entire operation and being responsible ultimately for when things go wrong. Hopefully they go right a lot more often than when they go wrong. So, but you know, I think it's no different than becoming a department head or a CEO or whatever it is, that you become responsible for a lot more than other than maybe just what you're working on day to day yourself.
You talk about things that go wrong. What are some of the biggest challenges you have to face on a regular basis, or the things that the wrongs you have to make right, or the problems you have to solve? Like, do they fall into the same few buckets, or is it kind of on any given day you could have to put out a fire on any front?
Yeah, you don't necessarily always see the fires coming, and it's just dealing with them as they come. And listen, we're really fortunate in what we do. We're helping people have fun. So when we do have issues, it's not life-threatening issues and things like that. So I don't want to say it's not important, because it's very important to me and to our team that we do a great job. But ultimately, we're just trying to help people have more fun. So, you know, do we have problems from day to day or problems that are consistent? Sure. I mean, I'd love to have more access on the golf course than we do right now to make more people happy. You know, we're just so busy. You know, COVID gave us a great opportunity where everybody's really excited about golf. Do I wish we had more access? Do I wish some days we didn't have to worry about slow play and things like that? Sure. But they're nice problems to have too. That means people are really excited about golf and they're coming to the golf course. And so it's not serious problems by any stretch.
We need to take a break on One-on-One. We will have more with Jeff Kitty in just a few moments. But right now, I want to remind you that One-on-One with Matt Leon is sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Now's the time for a great deal on a new Honda. Meet the next generation of vehicles. Check out the Honda Prologue, Accord Hybrid, or Civic Hybrid. For a limited time, you can get 0.99% APR on a 2025 Prologue, a 2.99% APR on a 2025 Accord Hybrid, or a 4.99% APR on a 2025 Civic Hybrid. Contact your local Honda dealer today. Offers applicable only to well-qualified buyers. And now on One-on-One with Matt Leon, let's get back to our conversation with Jeff Kitty, head golf professional at Aronimink Golf Club. Now, did I read you've also served as a rules official for several big tournaments?
I'm a member of the PGA of America Rules Committee. So there's about 35 of us that are PGA professionals, you know, golf professionals from all different parts of the country and all different types of jobs. Some are traditional golf professionals like me where they run facilities. Some are tournament directors, but they're PGA members as well. So it's kind of a nice collection of golf professionals from all over the country. And I've been on the committee since 2013. And with that, we work our championships. So at the highest levels, that's the Ryder Cup, the PGA Championship, our Senior PGA Championship, the KPMG Women's PGA Championship. Those are our spectator events. But we also work at our member championships. That's our National Club Professional Championship, the Professional National Championship, the Senior Professional National Championship, our PGA Cup, which is a Ryder Cup for PGA professionals playing against people from the UK. So we work those events too, our National Assistance Championship. So we work those events too and a couple others on there. So I've gotten to work, I think, 8 PGA championships now. I worked the 2021 Ryder Cup, which was delayed a year because of COVID, Whistling Straits. I'm fortunate to be able to work this year's Ryder Cup up at Bethpage in Long Island. So those are the things that, you know, I get to do. And pretty fortunate for me that I've gotten to go to so many PGA championships to see how things are done, try to steal a couple ideas here and there and have a real good flavor and be able to help my members with relating to things about the PGA championship as it's coming so quickly.
Tournament week, serving as a rules official, like what do you do?
Yeah, so for the PGA championship, how we do it, different roles. The majority of us are on a golf hole. So this year at Quail Hollow, I was on the 15th hole and the third hole on opposite days. So 15 on Thursday and Saturday, the third hole on Friday and Sunday. And then on Sunday, I also walked with the third to last group. The last five groups on Saturday and Sunday have a walking official go with them that's assigned to them. So I walked. So we'll have five officials on Saturday and Sunday walk. So I walked with John Rahm and Siwoo Kim, which is, you know, the best part of the experience, honestly, being in, you know, inside walking with a group, being assigned to the group and handling anything that would come up with that group. That's how we do it. But we have other responsibilities, you know, being the first or 10th tee rules official that's starting the players and the people that handle scoring at the end of the round. A lot of concentration on pace of play. And we have other guest officials there with us too, people from the PGA Tour, the Senior PGA Tour, people from the DP World Tour, USGA, the RNA. So we have other people working with us too. We have our allied friends that help us too.
Are you looking for any rule breakers? Are you keeping an eye out, making sure that somebody doesn't change a lie or stuff like that? I mean, at this level, it's almost absurd to kind of bring it up. But like, do you have to look at things to make sure everything's on the up and up and proceeding as it should?
For sure. Just like any other sport where, you know, you have a referee, they're there for the equity of the contest. So largely we're there to help the player, you know, if they need help with a ruling and to help them before something happens, you know. But if something happens when we're not there and we come in, we help figure it out what it is, what the ruling is. And if there's penalties levied, that's what it is. But largely we're there to try to help the players and keep them from having problems.
What is the most common question or a couple of the most common questions you get in those situations from players when it comes to wanting a ruling or wanting guidance?
Especially at spectator championships, the more common rules are giving relief from the structures that are built for the tournament. And we call those temporary movable obstructions. So that's a common ruling that doesn't come up for events, you know, at our club level or even an amateur competition where they don't have something built like that. So that's something common that we have to help the players with, you know, but common things of, you know, taking a drop from a cart path or whatever it might be. Those are the more common things, but you never know what's going to come up either.
Are those white knuckling type situations for you because there's so much attention and you could make a decision that changes things? Like, or do you relish the time of being able to be, you know, so entwined with the game at that level?
I'd say it's both. You know, that's what you train for. That's what you prepare for, to, you know, to know the situations that you can give the proper ruling. But, you know, when you get called in or when you see something happening that you know you're going to have to do this when you're walking with a group, heart starts going a little bit. You know there's cameras on you. They know there's cameras around. So you want to make sure you get it right. Nobody wants to. It's no different. It's no different, but it is different than the players want to perform at the highest level. But when we get called in, we want to make sure we do a good job. So sure, the heart gets pumping a little bit. You know, I've had a couple rulings where it was a little lengthy and cameras and drone flying over you and you know what's going on. But you're also trying to pay attention to make sure that you give the right information too.
Do you have a most memorable moment from your career as a rules official?
Yeah, and my career is relatively short. I mean, we have people on our committee that have been doing this for over 30 years. So I've been doing this since 2013. So I don't have the experience, nearly the experience of some of the people on my committee. But I've had a couple rulings. I had one at Southern Hills for the PGA Championship. I was in the second to last group with Will Zalatoris and Cam Young, and Will had hit it in a place that, you know, required multiple drops, and it took a little while, but we got it right. It, you know, that was the most important thing. So, and it was, you know, on TV, and, you know, I've got my cell phone in my back pocket and it's blowing up as people are texting me like, you're on TV. I'm like, I know, I can see the cameras. I can hear the drone. I know what's going on. Just let me get off TV. We're trying to stay off TV. So that one was memorable for sure, which, you know, was kind of fun. You know, my son's watching the telecast. He's like, you're on TV. I'm like, yeah, I know. But again, you know, the best part is that we got the right ruling done and got playback, got going in.
Arana Mink. What makes it special, in your opinion? You know, as someone who has such an intimate knowledge of it, what do you think makes it special?
Yeah, beyond, you know, I'll start with the membership. The membership is truly what makes it special. I mean, you can have the greatest golf course in the world, but if you don't have a great membership, it might not be the same kind of atmosphere you want to be. So the atmosphere, A, with the membership and golf savvy membership that takes golf seriously but still likes to have fun is a great dynamic. But as far as the golf course and the property, you know, just driving into the club, if you've never driven into the club, a long driveway that comes up looking at this incredible Tudor clubhouse that's been there since 1928, it just gives you a feeling that you're someplace when you drive in. And then on top of that, the most important part probably for Arana Mink Golf Club is the golf course itself. You know, it's a very classic Donald Ross golf course that has real authenticity of what was, you know, intended to be. As far as the golf course today is very similar to what Ross had drawn and built, especially built. 18 original greens that haven't been moved to different locations, which is unusual for a golf course that's almost 100 years old. It's a great balance of being able to really challenge a good player, but very playable for the member, which is a very tough balance to have. And I think Arana Mink is a great example of having both of that. You know, incredibly conditioned. We've got an incredible superintendent, John Goslin, and his team that keep it in championship conditions. People say, well, you must be ramping up your agronomics for the tournament. Really, we're in championship condition already on a regular basis. So, yes, we're going to keep trying to fine-tune and do better and better and better as we always do. But that's the goal on a daily basis. So I'd say it's a mixture of all of those things and what makes it special. The people, the product, the culture, the atmosphere are all very special.
What's your favorite hole at Arana Mink?
I love short par fours. We've got several great par threes. You know, our eighth hole is probably our most difficult hole. It's a 250-ish yard par three to a small green with a great angle. But I love short par fours that have some uniqueness, and our seventh hole is that. Our 13th hole will be fun for the tournament. I think Kerry Haig, our chief championships officer, is likely to make it drivable a couple days with some out of bounds that comes in close on the left. So, you know, I love short par fours with interesting greens, but we've got a lot of great holes. But seven would probably be my favorite hole.
Taking Arana Mink out of the equation, what is your favorite golf course in America from what you've played and you've gotten the chance through, you know, other roles to be at so many special places. Do you have a favorite outside of Aronimink?
For sure. I mean, there's so many incredible golf courses. And, you know, with this awesome career and job that I've got, I've been fortunate to play a lot of them, you know, both in the United States and outside the United States. And again, like I told you, I didn't realize how lucky I was to work at Pine Valley, but Pine Valley is definitely my favorite golf course, you know, outside of Aronimink. It's so unique. It's so special. And I'm fortunate to get to go over there probably once or twice a year, you know, over the last 25 years. And every time I go back, I appreciate it more and more, the opportunity that I had to work there, and because the golf course is just so special and so unique.
Do you have a favorite player?
Yeah, I really don't. You know, I have players that I love to watch. I mean, who doesn't love watching Scottie Scheffler play? I love watching greatness. I feel really fortunate that I got to watch Tiger Woods through his entire career. It was just so incredible to watch. It was magical. You know, I didn't get to watch Muhammad Ali box, really. I didn't see Mickey Mantle play baseball. But I got to see Tom Brady, and I got to watch Tiger Woods. But, you know, today's player, I really appreciate, and, I love watching him, and being at the PGA Championship and seeing him in person is special, too. But I also like the guys who get a lot out of their game that might not hit it, like Rory or Scottie. So, you know, somebody like Brian Harman, I love watching him play and just grit it out, you know, not having the physical gifts that some of the other players have.
Have you ever gotten starstruck when you get to, maybe not even meet, but, you know, walk with one of these groups and somebody like, wow, I can't believe I'm 6 feet away from so-and-so? Or are you ingrained enough in the game where a lot of that wow factor or that oh my God factor is kind of washed away, where it's more, this is just how it works when you do this job?
Yeah, I don't think I get starstruck to be around them individually. I'm always just incredibly impressed with their talent, especially when I get to walk inside the ropes and watch them for 18 holes. I mean, I walked with Bryson DeChambeau last year at Valhalla. It's the most incredible thing I've ever seen in golf for 18 holes. I mean, just the shots he hit are just unlike anybody else playing. So I'm starstruck at their ability. I wouldn't say necessarily that I'm starstruck by the individuals themselves. I appreciate them. And largely everyone that I've ever met has just been terrific and pretty darn regular.
Is there anything on your golf to-do list that you still need to do, still want to do?
Yeah, I never set out for any of this. You know, I didn't set out to be a rules official. It just kind of happened organically, and I've really enjoyed the experience. You know, I did want to work at a great club, and I wanted to aspire to be a good golf professional. So I continue to try to be the best golf professional I can be every day. I continue to try to be a great mentor to our assistant professionals and our other team members, for sure. That's really important to me. Is watching some of our assistant professionals move on to their own head professional jobs. So that's always, you know, front of mind probably the most, is, you know, making sure that our team is provided with the tools they need to continue to succeed. You know, there's certainly places that I still want to play in golf, so there's bucket lists for that, the places that I haven't gotten to, and there's far too many and not enough time, but I keep trying to pick away at those. So those are things that I keep trying to pick away at, and I'm sure I'll collect some more great experiences that I hadn't thought of, you know, that I've gotten to do, similar to that I've already gotten to do.
You talked about, I think when you said you were 16, you kind of realized, like, okay, listen, I'm not going to be able to play on the tour and stuff like that. But being a golfer and being so close to it, do you ever have moments of, man, I wonder if I should have given it a try, just because you're so connected to, or being that close and seeing what it's all about and seeing the level you have to be at, is that a in real time reality check to any of those thoughts?
Yeah, I've never thought too much like, I wonder if I should have tried harder. I mean, I tried hard, you know, I practiced hard. I played hard. I still do. And, you know, these guys are incredible. I mean, it's the 1% of 1%ers for talent in golf. And it's so global now too. I mean, when you look at the leaderboards of, you know, they're all over the world. I mean, what Tiger did for the interest of the game is just incredible. And the athletes that are playing the game now, too. I mean, you didn't see 6'3", 6'4" studs playing golf back then. But now you do. It's cool. So I don't have any, you know, I wouldn't even any regrets or any second thoughts. I love what I do. I love my job. I love where I work. You know, excited about the opportunities that are coming and, you know, really excited for what Aronimink gets to do.
How would you describe the Philadelphia golf community?
Again, moving down here from Rochester, and I didn't know much. You know, I was 29 years old. I didn't realize how incredible Philadelphia golf is. And you kind of have that top layer with, you know, obviously I knew about Marion Golf Club and I knew about Aronimink and I knew about Pine Valley and heard about Philadelphia Cricket Club. But there's so many incredible golf courses. And, you know, it was a hub of architecture too. You had A.W. Tillinghast was from Philadelphia, who designed Philadelphia Cricket Club, and he designed other great places like Baltusrol and Wingfoot and San Francisco Golf Club. So he was from here. William Flynn, who designed Philadelphia Country Club, you know, other places like Cherry Hills. He worked at Shinnecock. So you had this hub of architects that were from here. And, you know, Hugh Wilson, who designed not only Marion but Cobbs Creek. And then George Crump, who did Pine Valley. All these Philadelphians who were so significant in the early stages of golf architecture. And that's part of the reason, you know, Gil Hand set up his shop here in Philadelphia was this Philadelphia School of Architecture and the influence that they had on the game. So with that, we have such incredible golf courses, you know, like a Rolling Green Golf Club, you know, William Flynn course, or Manufacturers, another William Flynn, you know, Gulf Mills, another Donald Ross. Just, you know, there's so many, and I'm going to fall short of getting them all. Or a White Marsh Valley, George C. Thomas, who went on to California to design some of the most significant golf courses in the game, let alone in Los Angeles. So I didn't realize how great Philadelphia golf was until I got here, and it still continues to amaze me. When I go play someplace for the first time, if I haven't played, I'm like, wow, this place is so great. And if you're not from the area, you just don't realize how great it is until you spend more time here.
Final question, favorite part of your job?
Favorite part of my job is that it suits my personality. I couldn't do the same thing every day all the time. So I get to do so many different things, you know, be it running tournaments, you know, running our retail operation, working with our assistant professionals, you know, teaching, fitting golf clubs. I mean, I'm doing something different every day all the time. I would not lend well to doing the same thing over and over. So the position is so well suited for me. But I enjoy all those aspects of the game too. I would hate it if I didn't get to teach as much as I get to teach, and, you know, and fitting clubs, which is kind of instruction-like too. But I also enjoy running tournaments and putting on great events for the members. That's always been a passion and something that I really enjoy. So the complete variety, and then being around so many great people in the game is probably even more so my favorite part. I mean, there's just – golf has given me so many great relationships and so many great friends, be it members, be it other golf professionals, staff members that I've been, you know, so fortunate to work with. But working with these people and creating these, you know, lifelong relationships. And we work a lot as golf professionals, but the benefit is that we make so many friends through it too.
Jeff Kitty, thanks so much for coming in.
Yeah, thank you very much, Matt.
And that will do it for this week's episode of One-on-One with Matt Leon, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. Want to thank Jeff Kitty, head golf professional at Aronimink Golf Club, for coming in studio and being our guest this week. Now, if you like this show, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, do us a favor, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on X at One-on-One Pod. You can follow me there as well at MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next time when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.